From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, we're in Turkey, where a coal mine disaster has killed over 240 workers, with hundreds more trapped deep underground.
Turkey is a close and long-standing friend and ally of the United States. We are ready to assist the Turkish government if necessary, and we will continue to stand together in this time of tragedy.
Also today, the United Nations warns of Islamist group Boko Haram's growing strength in Africa. And in Florida, 20 more people are tested for the deadly MERS virus.
We had a total of 17 Orlando Health team members and three physicians that have been notified of their possible exposure to the MERS virus. At this time, the team members have been brought in. They then were evaluated for any signs or symptoms that were consistent with the MERS virus.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. Protests have broken out in Soma, Turkey, where over 100 mine workers remain trapped underground after an electrical transformer explosion. At least 245 miners have been confirmed dead. The protesters say the incident could have been prevented if only government officials hadn't voted down a motion to examine the safety of the coal plants just 20 days ago. Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan has visited the mine and declared 3 days of mourning for the victims. And Turkey's Minister of Energy said this might be the worst mine accident in the country's history, as Turkey-based journalist Laura Wells explains.
He prepared people earlier in the day saying that this might be the most disastrous mine accident in Turkey's history. The worst accident was in 1992 when 236 perished. So we're already above that number, and we're looking to have many, many more casualties.
Crisis talks have begun in Kiev without participation from pro-Moscow militants. International monitors are leading the talks between Ukraine's interim government and other leading figures. In Nigeria, it's reported that 200 members of Islamist militant group Boko Haram are dead after residents of three northern villages fought back at an attack by the militants. The news comes as U.S. and U.K. teams work with the Nigerian government to secure the release of the hundreds of schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram. But in the U.S., some senior lawmakers, including former Republican presidential nominee John McCain, say President Obama is not doing enough. Here's Lorna Shattuck.
Speaking to the Daily Beast, Senator McCain said if he were U.S. president, he would already be doing several things to help rescue the girls that the Obama administration has declined to do. That includes, he said, pre-positioning American special forces to be ready to enter Nigeria and rescue the 200-plus schoolgirls if the chance arose. The senator said such action should be allowed under international law because the abduction is what he called a crime against humanity.
The U.S. military is hoping to transfer Chelsea Manning to a civilian prison so she may receive treatment for her gender dysphoria. Chelsea Manning, previously known as Bradley Manning, has been sentenced to 35 years in prison for releasing hundreds of thousands of classified documents via WikiLeaks. Washington correspondent Priscilla Huff reports.
No decision has been made, but the Pentagon is reviewing how to properly balance the soldiers' medical needs. In this case, Chelsea Manning's need for treatment for gender dysphoria with the U.S. military's obligation to ensure Private Manning remains behind bars. Officially, the U.S. military does not provide hormone treatment for transgender enlistees, and transgender soldiers can be summarily dismissed. But the U.S. Department of Veterans does.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. A long delay is coming to the murder trial of South African Paralympian Oscar Pistorius after the judge ordered the athlete be sent for a month-long complete psychiatric evaluation. The state applied for the motion after a psychiatrist testified for the defense that the athlete suffers from a general anxiety disorder. Pistorius is charged with murder after he shot and killed his girlfriend Reva Steenkamp. He maintains it was an accident. A British court has heard the entertainer Rolf Harris say it takes two to tango when he was confronted about an alleged victim of sexual abuse. The 84-year-old, who is on trial for a number of indecent assault charges dating back to the 1960s, is accused of making the comment to the brother of one of his alleged victims. UK correspondent Dan Whitehead reports.
The jury at Southwark Crown Court in London heard on Wednesday from the brother of the alleged victim. The alleged victim's mother also gave evidence, saying she remembers Mr. Harris going upstairs to see her teenage daughter, who was 14 or 15 at the time. Mr. Harris admits an affair with the woman, but denies it started while she was underage.
And a convicted murderer in the U.S. state of Texas has been granted a stay of execution just 2 hours before he was scheduled to be put to death. Evidence has emerged suggesting Texas prosecutors knew the man was mentally disabled and therefore ineligible for execution. Daniel Wrenches has more.
Robert James Campbell was due to be the first death row inmate to be executed after the state of Oklahoma botched an execution and drew attention to mounting doubts about the sourcing of drugs. A federal appeals court has denied a claim that the Texas execution should be halted on the basis that the state has refused to supply information about the source of its drugs. Instead, the panel has ordered the stay of execution on the basis of allegations that prosecutors withheld evidence.
And that's the latest from Feature Story News. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports.
Our thoughts and prayers are with the people of Turkey today in the wake of a coal mine explosion in Soma, in which some 200 have been killed and hundreds more remain trapped. On behalf of the American people, we extend our heartfelt condolences to the families of the victims and our best wishes for the safe exit of the remaining miners. Turkey is a close and long-standing friend and ally of the United States. We are ready to assist the Turkish government if necessary, and we will continue to stand together in this time of tragedy.
Jay Carney delivering an offer of help from the White House following Turkey's deadly mine disaster that so far claimed the lives of more than 240 workers. Hundreds of miners remain trapped more than a mile underground after Tuesday's explosion and fire at a coal mine in the western town of Soma. The incident has triggered a backlash of blame and anger directed at the Turkish government. For the latest, I spoke to journalist Laura Wells in Turkey.
Well, right now, the rescue efforts are continuing. The Minister of Energy has confirmed that 245 are dead. There's over 100 still missing. And he prepared people earlier in the day saying that this might be the most disastrous mine accident in Turkey's history. The worst accident was in 1992 when 236 perished. So we're already above that number, and we're looking to have many, many more casualties. Unfortunately, there's a fire that still rages, and it's well below ground, and they have not been able to bring many more of the miners up yet.
And Laura, there have been scenes of protest and outrage directed at the government over this disaster. What can you tell us about that?
Within the protests, there are those on site in Soma, some of the relations of the deceased or the injured. They even attacked the ruling party's headquarters there and damaged the building today. There are also other protests that happened earlier and continue to happen in Ankara and in Istanbul. Those are comprised also of unions as well as other people who are critics of Erdogan or even just critics in this situation, because the main opposition party, CHP, did file a motion back in October of 2013 saying that these mines should be investigated for the working conditions, because there were 4,500 accidents at these mines, these particular mines, in 2013 alone. So they really feel that because the AKP parliamentarians voted down this motion just 20 days ago on April 29th, their issue is that this electrical transformer which exploded was manufactured by the mining company itself to cut down on the production of coal costs. Previously, they had been importing them, and they stopped that so that they could reduce the cost of coal from $130 per ton down to $24 per ton. So that's a drastic measure, and people feel this was preventable.
Prime Minister Erdogan has been speaking today. What did he have to say?
He made a speech today at the site in Soma, and he said that these things happen, that they're just a usual part of the workplace in mining. He alluded to a lot of different casualties and mining accidents in 19th century UK, as well as in early 20th century United States. He seemed to be saying that this could not have been prevented because such things happen. this particularly inflamed what some people thought was a lack of responsibility or accountability on the government's part. And this has further sparked the protests.
Laura, the United States, the White House today said it was ready to assist with this crisis in Turkey. Has there been much support from the international community over this explosion in the mine?
So far, I'm not aware of any foreign groups that are been allowed to assist in the rescue effort, but it may be necessary if they cannot procure the last miners that are alive.
And they've got no idea as yet how long this entire operation might take?
They haven't given a deadline. They have gone into the mine, and I've even seen pictures of them just taking out parts of the mine walls, the mine shafts. Not really sure. You know, they said that this is 2 kilometers deep and goes 4 kilometers from the mouth of the mine. So this is quite an operation.
Journalist Laura Wells in Turkey. This is FSN Reports. The spread of the potentially deadly MERS virus is becoming more serious, but is not yet a global health emergency, according to the World Health Organization. There have been more than 570 confirmed cases worldwide, mainly in the Middle East. But several incidences have been diagnosed in Asia, Europe, and the United States. Our US correspondent Steve Mort reports from Florida, where 20 people are being tested.
According to the World Health Organization, the outbreak of Middle East respiratory syndrome is more serious and urgent. But the agency says it stopped short of declaring a health emergency so as not to raise anxieties. No new evidence, experts say, has been found to suggest increased human-to-human transmission. Here in the US, 2 cases of the virus have been confirmed, one in Indiana and the other here in Florida. Both patients were healthcare workers who'd traveled from Saudi Arabia, which is experiencing an outbreak. While the cause is a mystery, some scientists believe it may be caused by contact with camels. Dr. Antonio Crespo, an infectious disease specialist in Orlando, where the Florida case of MERS was found, says everything possible is being done to contain the virus.
We are prepared for situations like this. This is what we do every day. And we continue to work very closely with the CDC and our Orange County Health Department to identify any potential persons that could have been exposed and to continue to monitor the contacts that we have identified.
The CDC, or Centers for Disease Control, says it's working with U.S. border agents to help detect further cases of MERS entering the United States. Signs are being posted at more than 20 major international airports warning travelers about the symptoms of MERS. So far, about 30% of people who are infected with the virus have died from it. In Orlando, the infected patient is said to be responding well to treatment and remains in quarantine. But it's believed the infected person waited several hours in a busy waiting room to be seen by doctors, and it was several more hours before he was tested for MERS. Florida health officials say it's unlikely anyone nearby could have become infected, but 20 healthcare workers who came into contact with the patient are being monitored. 2 who showed flu-like symptoms have tested negative for the virus. Dr. Ken Michaels is medical director of occupational health at Orlando Health, which operates the hospital where the MERS case is being treated.
We had a total of 17 Orlando Health team members and 3 physicians that have been notified of their possible exposure to the MERS virus. At this time, the team members have been brought in. They've completed a CDC investigation form. They then were evaluated for any signs or symptoms that were consistent with the MERS virus.
Infectious disease experts say more MERS cases are likely to be detected in Florida, not because of person-to-person transmission, but because the state is a popular destination for international tourists. The White House says President Obama is getting regular briefings on the MERS cases in the U.S. MERS is believed to be similar to SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, first reported in Asia in 2003. That virus spread to 37 countries and killed more than 700 people before being contained. Steve Mort, Orlando.
Now, as talks got underway Wednesday in Kiev over a potential end to the Ukrainian crisis, Russia's foreign minister warned Ukraine was close to civil war. The roundtable meeting came on the heels of the Ukraine government signing a $1 billion deal with the EU to help the country pay off Russian debt. Ukraine's interim prime minister, Arseniy Yatsenyuk, said his team would stick to pledges for reform, but had strong words for Russia, who he blames for supporting separatist movements. Our Europe correspondent Sandra Gatman reports.
Fresh aid for Ukraine was signed away in Brussels, with the EU pledging more than $1 billion to help the Ukrainian government improve its institutions and to pay off its huge debts to Russian gas suppliers. In exchange, Ukraine has promised widespread public reforms. It was the first trip by more than a few members of Ukraine's interim government, who met with various EU officials on a wide range of ongoing issues, a show of ever-deepening ties. EU Commission President José Manuel Barroso.
Ukraine can count on the European Union now and in the future.
The aid deal comes alongside several financial lifelines for Ukraine, including aid from the United States and a $17 billion package agreed with the International Monetary Fund. The EU has tried to help Ukraine in other ways too, temporarily lifting customs duties to the rest of Europe and reversing the flow of natural gas more cheaply from Slovakia instead of Ukraine relying on Russian supply. Ukraine is also set to sign a free trade deal with the EU in June. It's all part of efforts to avoid Ukraine suffering a financial crisis during a time of grave instability. Ricardo Giucci is head of the German advisory group to Ukraine.
I think this year it's clear that we will have a recession in the country. Some estimate that it will be about 5% of GDP. The recession is a strong recession, but it's not a huge thing. So the country is not going to break down as many people think. It will be a strong recession. But if you compare it to 2009, the recession was then 15% of GDP, and that's much stronger. That's why I think that this is manageable.
Aside from the economy, Ukraine's interim prime minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk said security in the east of his country remains a top concern and pointed a strong finger at Russia, who he blames for supporting separatist movements there.
Russia is already engaged in supporting Russian-led protesters and terrorists. We urge Russia to condemn them, to urge all these so-called protesters or really terrorists to leave and vacate the buildings and to do everything they can to stabilize the situation in Ukraine. Russia will fail to make Ukraine a failed state.
But the real test for Russian cooperation will be Ukraine's upcoming national elections on May 25th, with Europe counting on Moscow to support a smooth process or face tougher economic sanctions. Sandra Gatman, Brussels.
This is FSN Reports. The United Nations is warning that as one African terrorist organization declines, another is gaining strength. At a briefing on Central Africa, the Security Council heard evidence that the Lord's Resistance Army, or LRA, led by Joseph Kony, had been severely weakened in recent months. But the Security Council said the Nigerian group Boko Haram is spreading and rising to take the place left by the LRA. Nick Harper reports from the UN headquarters in New York.
For almost 30 years, the Lord's Resistance Army, known as the LRA, has terrorised Central Africa. Led by warlord Joseph Kony, the United Nations estimates the group has killed more than 100,000 and abducted more than 6,000 children to use as soldiers and sex slaves. But now, the UN Security Council notes a change. The UK's Deputy Permanent Representative to the UN, Peter Wilson, explains.
The concerted efforts of Uganda, the other affected countries, the African Union, the United Nations and other partners have substantially weakened the LRA. Our goal now must be permanent eradication of the threat that they pose.
Between 2010 and 2013, the UN says LRA killings dropped by 75%, abductions by 50%. And in the last 2 years, nearly 200 LRA soldiers have defected or been released, reducing the LRA's force to fewer than 500 fighters. But regional insecurity has hampered the hunt for Kony. Violence in South Sudan and the Central African Republic seems to have given the LRA breathing space. Here's the head of the UN office in Central Africa, Abu Musa.
The political situation and security situation in Central Africa remains fragile. Armed violence has undermined efforts to promote and guarantee stability, has jeopardized implementation of the African Union's Regional Cooperation Initiative for the elimination of the Lord's Resistance Army.
Indeed, the worsening violence in South Sudan has meant the government there and in neighbouring Uganda have withdrawn some of their troops from the special 5,000-strong task force that has been tracking down the LRA. But Abu Musa said he thought the end of Kony was coming pretty soon. The task force say he's sheltering in a Sudanese-controlled enclave of South Sudan. But the US's permanent representative to the UN, Samantha Power, said governments must do more to expose him.
Any government should be embarrassed to be sheltering the Lord's Resistance Army. After a quarter century of merciless brutality, the LRA should not be tolerated, let alone helped by anyone, not to mention a member state of the United Nations.
Yet as the LRA weakens, the Security Council spoke of a new emerging threat. Here's Samantha Power again.
We view with horror and outrage the ongoing campaign of destruction perpetrated by Boko Haram, which is migrating east and knocking on Central Africa's door.
Boko Haram's abduction of more than 200 Nigerian schoolgirls has shocked the world. And now the UN is warning Boko Haram could spread to Nigeria's neighbours and beyond. There are fears they could exploit the religious tensions stirred up in the Central African Republic, searching out Muslims who've been forced out of the country by the anti-Balaka Christian militias. The head of the UN's office in Central Africa is warning of the parallels between the LRA and Boko Haram. When asked about rumours that Boko Haram in West Africa was reaching out to other terrorist groups, including Al-Shabaab in East Africa, he couldn't confirm it, but said, if we don't act fast, that may happen. Nick Harper, New York.
And finally tonight, FSN Spotlight, our new segment taking an in-depth look at a story you might have missed. With today's edition, Simon Marks.
Today on FSN Spotlight, the relationship between religion and art. One of the fundamental differences between the US and Britain is America's embrace of the separation between church and state. That isn't the case on the other side of the Atlantic, where Queen Elizabeth II serves as the head of state and head of the Church of England. But Britain is engaged in a big internal conversation about whether, in its multicultural modernity, it really is now a Christian nation. And Peter Aspden, arts correspondent of the Financial Times, has been thinking about the impact of that discussion on the role modern art plays in today's places of worship.
In a typically tricky week for the Church of England, some jolting news. For the first time ever, a moving image artwork is to be installed for the long term inside a British church. But you'll have to watch it very carefully. The artist is Bill Viola, famous for his super slow motion videos, whose latest installation, Martyrs, is to be unveiled later this month in St Paul's Cathedral. It's a smart combination. Viola's videos are rich in religious references and intensely spiritual in their intent. The slow-mo has a hypnotic effect. The precise gestures and positioning of his characters deliberately evoke Renaissance painting, and their minute shifts of expression are wholly absorbing. It is as if devotion has suddenly acquired an extra dimension. Martyrs is the first of two pieces which will take its place behind the high altar of Britain's most famous place of worship. It will be joined next year by a companion piece, Mary. Together they will address, according to the artist, some of the profound mysteries of human existence. One is concerned with birth and the other death, says Viola. One with comfort and creation, the other with suffering and sacrifice. If I'm successful, the final pieces will function both as aesthetic objects of contemporary art and as practical objects of traditional contemplation and devotion. Elsewhere, another tentative meeting between religion and contemporary art, most of which, let's be truthful, has little appetite for the studious contemplation of profound themes. Leicester Cathedral will be unveiling Speaking in Tongues, a large-scale painting by Paul Benny, which depicts the artist's friends as apostles, with flames hovering above them. Benny says he was inspired by Goya's painting of 1794, Lunatics in the Yard. Unsurprisingly, the imagery in both of these works is connected to Christianity, and yet the artists go out of their way to describe the eclecticism of their own religious feelings. Viola says he's been heavily influenced by Zen Buddhism and Islamic Sufism in his work. Benny's depiction of light emanating from the head as an animation of the spirit has associations, he says, with the pillar of fire in Judaism and the aureole in the sacred art of ancient Greece. Both men's works, in other words, seem devised to look outside their immediate context. Their Christian themes are conduits to broader reflections. Not only is the Church of England unembarrassed by this, it seems actively to encourage it. Indeed, it may reflect what the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, meant when he described Britain as a post-Christian society earlier this week. Responding to a debate initiated by the Prime Minister David Cameron at Easter over the nature of the nation's Christian status, he explained what he meant by the term. It means the cultural memory is still quite strongly Christian, and in some ways the cultural presence is still quite strongly Christian, but it is post-Christian in the sense that habitual practice for most of the population is not taken for granted. A Christian nation can sound like a nation of committed believers, and we are not that. Equally, we are not a nation of dedicated secularists. It was a boldly nuanced response, formulated at his peril. These matters are easily and willfully misunderstood. Back in the day, I once helped write a story on my local evening newspaper about a cleric who had advanced a highly sophisticated questioning of the literalness of religious narratives. Later on, I spotted the billboard headline that was supposed to sum up the story. "There is no God," claimed City Vicar. It was quite a scoop. For a church that is happy to place doubt as well as faith at the centre of its intellectual inquiry, contemporary art is good news. In its conceptual audacity and forthright challenges to aesthetic conformity, it's designed to stir its audience. That might be said to be the opposite of what a church is supposed to do, but it isn't. Proper religious investigation is, like the best contemporary art, open-ended and provocative. Viola's work, as well as Benny's, stands in opposition to complacency and shallowness. They ask questions, and anything that takes place in a religious setting that encourages more questions than answers sounds good to me. Art, in the meantime, also has plenty to gain from being housed in such spiritually laden venues. There was a reason why they put the work of the best painters in churches for most of Western art's history. We've lost some of the solemnity of that relationship. There is a superficial, even tawdry feel to many inferior contemporary art shows. And when artists play with installations inside gallery walls, the self-referential tricksiness of it all can be very depressing. One only needs to think of Martin Creed's Turner Prize-winning work number 227, otherwise known as The Lights Turning On and Off, a candidate for the most infantile artwork of all time. In a world that was not replete with visual images, the Renaissance masters sought to inspire wonderment, fear, and rapture among the congregations that admired their work. Today we are cluttered with images, and all of those responses are available at the squeeze of a remote control button. Art needs to find new places to rediscover its impact. Churches are not only an exciting opportunity for today's artists, they are a refuge.
That's Peter Aspden, arts correspondent of the Financial Times. You can hear more of his essays and read more of his coverage at the newspaper's website, ft.com. With FSN Spotlight, I'm Simon Marks.
And that's the Wednesday edition of FSN Reports. Coming up on Thursday, we profile the controversial new kid on the UK's political block. That's Thursday, but for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside producer Simon Marks and Rebecca Foster on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone, with feature story news everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.